Welcome back to the World on Drugs podcast with me, Steve Fury. You heard me. You love me. You probably never seen me live. We got another banger, folks. We got the Zoo Man Clan.
But Steve, I don't know what the Zoo Man Clan is. Steve, please explain to me what the Zoo Man Clan is.
It's a Serbian mafia. It's the motherfucking Serbian mafia. We're throwing bad words out early. Baby. Once again, you know, I've been saying this. Some people have been getting mad. No offense to these groups that we're doing these on, okay? I just look on the internet. I have some people, some sleuths. And then I write these things, and I make them. Or someone else kind of helps me write them. All right, this one I kind of did on my own. Did it a long time ago. This was kind of the ones where I realized I didn't want to do this all by myself. Why? Because I don't like school. I don't like to write this type of way, so I get people to help me. All right, let's jump into it. Little synopsis for that ass. The Serbian Mafia has its origins in the arrival of increasing numbers of Yugoslavian immigrants to Western Europe in the 1970s and the 1980s. Operating in Germany, Italy, the Netherlands, and France, groups of Serbian expatriates engaged in a pattern of robberies and thefts. Much of this was supported by the Communist Yugoslavian Intelligence Service, who employed gangsters overseas as informants and assassins, in exchange would provide them with firearms and legal protection. I kind of slurred on that one. The combination of Yugoslavian government support and the money earned from brazen heists made Yugoslavian criminals some of the most powerful in Western Europe in the 1980s. With the collapse of the Soviet Union and its allies in Eastern and Southern Europe, many Serbian criminals overseas returned to Yugoslavia, taking advantage of the chaos to embark on new criminal careers. And guess what, folks? They fucking did it, these guys. They're badass. Pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff that they did. Many served in paramilitary and militia organizations created ostensibly to protect ethnic Serbs and government property. But quickly they became known for the criminal activities and the role in the ethnic cleansing of Bosnians, Krauts, and Slovenes from Serb territories. Krauts, I never knew Krauts were Croatians. Did anyone else? Or maybe I'm not pronouncing that right. With the end of the Yugoslavian wars, these militias became entwined with the criminal clans of Serbia, with both enjoying the support of the former communist intelligence and security forces. These guys, okay, like we've seen over and over again, when a government is shitty and small, it has to get, you know, a military or police force from somewhere, and a lot of times they reach out to the biggest criminal organizations. With the overthrow of Slobodan Milosevic, a period of reform was ushered in. In response, the most violent and powerful Serbian crime group, the Zuman Clan, partnered with Serbian special forces to assassinate the motherfucking prime minister, dog. I'm talking some JFK shit. In order to protect the status and privilege that they are garnered during the bloodshed of the 1990s. So if you like, sick shit, this might be your episode. Steve, you're coming a little hot, buddy. You're coming with a little energy. I don't know, because I'm recording in the back of the tour bus. Remember me? Steve Fury tours with Bert Kreischer, one of the biggest and best comedians in the world, and one of my favorite freaking people. So, as you've seen, this episode is a little bit of a hodgepodge, okay? We're going to break this up into two parts. One, because when you're touring with Bert, he kind of wants you there with him all the time, so there's not really enough time to do this. Number two, on the first half, did it with my man Dave Dubs Williamson, David Dubs, and he kind of got too drunk and wasn't able to finish the pod. So this one's going to be the one I do with him. The next one the next half of the pod we'll put out next week, I'll do with him and on my own. But this is the part, if you didn't skip, this is the part you want to know. You want to know, Stevie Boy, what has been up with you, man? Well, you know, we're about 3 weeks on the road. I miss my friends. No, let's start that again. I miss my girlfriend. I miss my cat. I miss my friends. I miss the comedy store. I miss the setup show. And I miss Bear City. I miss my bed. But I am blessed to be able to do this, and I would not want to do anything else in the motherfucking world. Except maybe if I could go home for a day and then come back, it would be kind of cool. All right, let's start. Last time I talked to you guys with my main Shane Torres, since then, we did our little Florida run. Not first time in Florida. You guys know I went to freaking Fort Myers. But this is my first time experiencing Florida with Florida men. Davey Dubs is a Florida man. Birdie K is a Florida man. First off, we pull into Tampa. We play the Carroll Morsani Hall. Number one, when we go into Tampa, stay at Bert's parents' house. Not going to tell you where that is. Why? Because you're some of your weirdos. You try to do weirdo shit, so I'm not going to tell you where that is. But everywhere, I'll say they lived on a private lake. I guarantee you this, that ain't going to. Lake swamp, private swamp. I ain't going to narrow it down, Jack, because there's swamps on the side of the fucking freeways here. So we go to their place. It's fun. It's interesting. I mean, it's a beautiful place, and it's a beautiful lookout. But it's a lot like, you know, when you go to, like, a reptile exhibit at the zoo, and then they got that one exhibit where you can kind of poke your head in through a little, like, half circle, and you're like, hey, I'm in the exhibit. That's what all of Florida is, because people are like, hey, look, I have a backyard, but it's caged in, and there's guns. Their place was beautiful. His parents were freaking amazing. It was a really great time. Let's go to the Carroll Morsani Hall, Tampa, Florida. We had 2 days of shows. This place was gorgeous. I'm with the man, the legend, Birdie K, and he returns home. He's from Tampa Bay, Florida. What I would say about the venue, other than it being beautiful, trash. Trash. Number one, let's start with the front of the house, right? Not backstage, okay? You can drink on the outside before you get into the room. Everyone's kind of pretty much maskless drinking. Then once you get into the theater, you have to wear a mask and you can't drink inside. Listen, you guys know me. You know Stevie Boy. I'm about as liberal as they come. But sometimes you just got to stop being stupid. If you can fucking drink 20 feet away and without a mask and hang out with people, why can't you do it during the show? Okay, so as you can see why that rule would be so stupid, that's gonna start affecting us in the back of the house in a second. Okay, so the problem is, you're like, Steve, why do you even care? Okay, why do you even care about the rules? Because this is what happens, right? As an opener, me and Dave, Dave is the concierge, okay? He's the guy who's got Bert's ear. Dave can do whatever he wants, but he's been nice enough to allow us to switch. So one day I'll open, he'll go second. One day he'll open, I'll go second. And when you're on a theater show, first guy, half his set place is about 60% set, you know, because one, people are still trying to get popcorn and soda and drinks, and that's fine. But when you did it at this Tampa Bay place, I would say 20% are set. And this is like a 2,000-3,000 seat room. So you're just kind of just not fun. And you know, this job's fucking awesome. It doesn't need to always be fun. But I can still complain because that's what I like to do. So that happened. So the first two opening acts on that one was 2 days, four shows, weren't my favorite in the world. Okay. Now the back of the house. There's some weasel fuck in the back who kept telling us to have our masks on. Keep in mind, for me to get backstage, I had to take a COVID test. Okay, so I sent you a COVID test that said I don't have COVID. I sent you my vaccination card that says I don't have vaccinations. Everyone I'm hanging out with around me did the same thing. Why the fuck do I have to have a mask on? Am I dumb? Do I understand this? No. At some point, common sense has to come in back into the world. But we got to hang out with a guy named Mike Calta if you're from Tampa Bay. That guy is the man. I think he has the only surviving radio show that matters in the fucking world. And it was cool, man. It was great. Mike Calta's a really cool guy. Got to see all his guns if you follow me. I mean, it'd be weird if you listen to the podcast and didn't follow me. But that was the one where I had all those cool guns. Those are all real. Those are real bad boys. That was a Desert Eagle. Other than that, we went to Buck Stadium. Buck Stadium was pretty cool. Definitely wasn't as cool as going to Lambeau with Aaron Rodgers, but still pretty cool. Didn't get to see anybody cool, but the stadium was nice. It's very Florida. It's just very Florida. Everything's very Florida down here. You know why? And a lot of people won't believe this. Because it's Florida. Otherwise, though, it's been pretty fun. Weather's been very Florida. Pouring rain, very sunshine, hot. All right. Then we went off to Orlando. Beautiful Orlando Studios. The Hard Rock Live. This was interesting, man. This is our first time playing a rock venue. And it's so funny that the vibe, aura, and spirit of a room can be alive, okay? So last time when we did Tampa, very cunty. Oh, sorry. I shouldn't have said that. Nah, I'm going to keep it in. Whatever. They were kind of the C-wordy. And that kind of vibe permeated the place. I mean, Burt crushed every place, gets a standing ovation. But Orlando, since it's a rock club, this was one of the most rowdy crowds I've ever performed in front of in my life. And I know what you're thinking. Well, you know, control you've never controlled 2,000 to 3,000 people. Okay. It's not a comedy club where I can point at a guy and say something and then the audience hears him. It's more of you're like a movie and you just got to power through it. So we did that. Orlando, 2 days in Orlando. We're chilling. We're dancing. We're partying. No, we don't do any of that. We stay separated from everybody. But we get a be brought up to this place called the John Lennon Room, right? Keep in mind, this is a Hard Rock Live. Just like the restaurants, there's memorabilia everywhere. Original, pretty fucking dope-ass memorabilia. I mean, God, these Hard Rock places, their memorabilia has to be worth more than the shitty restaurants. So we go up to this place called the John Lennon Room. Everything's white. It's got his old computer. It's got his old piano. And it's got that old white suit he has, the one where he took a picture with him and Yoko. Really cool thing that the floor was white, but what they do when you got a white floor is they cut it into squares so that if you spill something, you just take the square out. And I got to say, that's one of the smartest damn things I've ever heard in my goddamn life. That was cool. We all smoked cigars up there. Cigars, how do I feel about them? I could go without. They kind of just make me sick. The worst was, well, I'll talk about that later. So that was the John Lennon Room. Very fun. You know, cigars just kind of make me sick. Then we go to Tallahassee, the Donald L. Tucker Civic Center. Okay, if you don't know Tallahassee, that's Florida State. A couple things about Florida State. Caucasian, very. Number two, so they used to have the Fighting Seminoles. They had this side profile of a Native American man screaming. Apparently people said that was racist, so they changed it to a very sad-looking Native American woman looking over her shoulder. And to me, far more racist and far more weird. But this was one of the things I will remember for the rest of my life. Okay, so no, Bert is from here. Bert, if you ever seen the movie Van Wilder, that was about his life. Okay, he spent 7 years at this college and walking around. People are loving him. People are, you know, shouting out. Then we get to the show, and it's at the Florida State Arena. Basketball arena. So some of these are theaters, some of these are arenas. The arena, probably 5,000 to 7,000 people in it. And it's where they played like different NCAA tournaments. They've had some pretty good basketball players. Scotty Barnes, now plays for Toronto, was on their team. Who's the big guy on Orlando? Always busts his knees out. Whatever. He was there. Pretty cool, man. Pretty cool. So we get there a little bit early, drive around, I love it. We go around town, we go to all of Bert. Bert's telling us, he's like, oh, in that bush, I used to have sex with this one girl. And he's like, oh, I used to do this there. And then we go and eat these sandwiches called Bagel. We did not get the bagels to my displeasure. God knows I love freaking bagels. We got these like cream cheese roast beef sandwiches with mozzarella on them. One of the more intense things I've ever eaten in my life, but everyone else loved them. Then we get back, Bert maybe goes to sleep, but he's just constantly working, man. The man's just constantly working. So we get some free time. So we pull some old strings, ding, 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 and we get brought up to the practice facility of Florida State basketball team, and we get a shoot, and it's immaculate, man. It's immaculate, and I remember me, you know, I'm shooting, and I'm like, man, I fucking suck at basketball now. Oh, my God. Not very good, but we shoot around, blah, blah, blah. Show's coming. I can feel the energy. The whole stadium's perking up. It's It's perking up. People are talking. There's a buzz. I'm going up second. So on these shows, there's a thing called God of Mic. God Mic is if you're ever at a show and someone talks over the speakers being like, you guys ready to rock? You guys ready to rock? Well, give it up for blah, 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 blah. So a lot of times if you do it at a comedy club, it's one of the general managers. If you do it at a show, it's normally the guy who's the middle act doing it for the first act. So I somehow lucked out on the show and Dave went up first. I'm getting ready to do the God of Mic. Keep in mind, there's 5,000 to 7,000 people here. Get ready to go. It won't turn on. We're like, what? It won't turn on. So we go, okay, play some music. The music won't turn on. And Dave walks out there cold, and the place goes crazy. Keep in mind, I've never done 5,000-7,000 seat arena. Green Bay was pretty high up there. It ain't this. It ain't the prodigal son of Bert Kreischer returning. And Dave goes in. Bow, bow, bow. Crush shitty. Crush in city. I'm sitting in the back. I'm taking videos. I'm feeling the energy. Something I've never felt before. This many people. This many people jacked to be there. And it's my turn to go out. And I go out. And they fucking hate me. They boo. They say, you're fat. Your parents don't love you. You're a bum. No, I go out there and have one of the best sets of my life. Just spiritual. Like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Okay, this is what I've always supposed to be doing. This is when I threw my life away for an art form that who knows if it'll be here in 7 years, and everyone thought I was a moron, that this is the moment that made it all worth it. You know, if I never go past where I am right now, opening for a top three or four act in the world in comedy, that's cool with me, man. I mean, would I want to be Bert one day? Yeah, sure. But I'm also looking around, and it kind of is a lot of fucking work to be Bert. You know what's not a lot of work? This guy. You're looking at him. All I got to do is this podcast that weighs on my back. Now I love you guys. This podcast is great. The numbers keep growing, and I appreciate it. But, you know, you're the king. You got to do shit. I don't got to do shit. I show up, do 15 minutes, get off stage. So I'm up there, and I'm crushing. I'm crushing. I'm crushing 5,000 to 7,000 people. Steve, what does it feel like? I mean, I'm smiling right now if you're watching on YouTube, whenever I put it out on YouTube. It just feels like it's not an orgasm thing. It's not anything like that. It's a one with yourself and your anxieties and your self-loathing and your I'm not good enough and your I should have done this. And I should have just had a family and been a state worker in Sacramento. No, it's I'm doing the right thing. So then my set ends. I'm getting roarous applause. I check my phone as I'm walking off stage. Hundreds of likes and hundreds of follows. So when you do giant video venues, you don't bring up Bert. He has a video play. So I get off. And what I've witnessed next is something I will never forget for the rest of my life, okay? I watch him play his video, and people are freaking out. And then he gets on stage, and there's 4 minutes of people cheering, standing, cheering for this man. And I can see he's getting emotional. And listen, he's one of the more emotional people I've ever met in my life. But he's getting emotional, not in conversation, Joe. And they're chanting for him. And they're loving him. And this is before he even gets a set. And this is a man who was Listen, I wasn't there at school, but if there's a guy who's been there 7 years and he's kind of a party boy, probably not the most respected person in the world. He comes back to a place as the prodigal son with open arms. More than open arms. It's like coming home and people are... Yeah, everyone's got blankets to put over your shoulders and hug and kiss your face. Then he goes and does a set. Fantastic. Night could have been done there. But that ain't it. That ain't the fucking night, bro. So, okay, you know, there's some problematic things about Florida State with the Seminoles, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it's not good. If they change it, it'd probably be better, but it's Florida. They don't really give a fuck. So before every game, what they do is an Indian guy comes out on a horse and he stabs the ground with a big spear. So they give him one of these big spears. At the end of his set, if you've seen the video on my Instagram, he comes out and he goes in the back and he grabs the spear and he starts chanting. So if you ever hear the, oh, oh, that's from Florida State, okay? I mean, it's from like Native Americans, so like a prop on them. So he brings out and he's holding the spear. They shut off the lights. He tells everyone to put on their phone cameras and they do the chop, Florida State chop. Oh, and he's pumping the spear. Oh, bro, I'm almost crying when I see this. Because it's a man reaching his dreams. And not saying reaching dreams. A man hosts one of the biggest television fucking game shows, blah, 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 blah. But, like, the feeling that I had going on stage, feeling I'm okay, I'm doing the right thing, but times a billion and a half. A billion and a half. Oh, and I forgot to say this one, right? So I'm jonesing after my set. So if Bert's on stage, I'm not necessarily always watching his spot. Sometimes I'll watch her trying to give him some little notes and stuff, but he's not really a big note guy. If you can trick him to think it's his idea, then he'll use it. So I go, okay, you know, I'm in the stadium. I haven't had a hot dog in months. I go, I'm going to go get a hot dog. I'm going to go sit at the top of the stadium, the worst seats. I'm going to watch his set, right? So I grab the hot dog. I go up there. I'm watching his set. I'm sitting behind a guy and his girlfriend. And the guy is fucking dying. And these are the worst seats you can have. And he don't give a fuck. Okay? He don't give a fuck. He's yelling, "Birdie boy! The machine! There ain't no way anyone can hear him." This man's so far, it's like, you know, your mom would whistle. And you'd be like, oh, shit, I got to run home. Ain't no one hearing it from that. I'm sitting behind this guy, eating this hot dog, watching him and his girlfriend. This is what makes me emotional and almost going to cry. Watching him and his girlfriend enjoy this show to a point that, motherfucker, you on a mountain, dog. You can't see shit. Luckily, there's TVs. You can see in TVs. And it's just like, I probably would have been that guy. I liked Bert. I went to watch him. And if someone was like, you could have the worst seat and then buy a hot dog, or you can have a slightly better seat, no hot dog, I would have been worst seat with the hot dog. I mean, I would have been yelling. That's not what I do. But I would have been watching it. And instead, I'm on stage with my idol. And my idol is cooler than I could have ever wanted him to be. You know, I've worked with guys that turn out to be fucking weirdos. Hundreds of those guys. And being up there eating that fucking cold hot dog and watching this dude enjoy himself was one of the more spiritual moments of my life. And then I went downstairs and then Bert did the spear thing. So that's Tallahassee. And you can understand why that will be a moment I remember for the rest of my fucking life. Okay. So the thing that Bert does. A lot of times when we get 2 or 3 days off, it doesn't make sense to fly home for 2 or 3 days. You know, you'd fly home, you'd be there for a day, you'd fly back, especially from Florida. Doesn't make sense. So he'll a lot of times get beach houses for us. Yeah, dog, on the beach, too. This ain't a beach house 2 blocks down. This is a beach house. Jack. So we get one in Jacksonville or Palos Los Verdes. I don't know. It's incredible. It's right on the beach, completely private. But I'm watching, and I'm like, no one's swimming. So we go out there, swim. Also, if you've never been on the Florida Ocean, it's warm. It's as warm as if you pissed in a pool. It's unsettlingly warm if you're from California. You've only been in the Pacific. It's just freezing cold. So we're all swimming. That's fun. We're cooking. That's having a great time. Bert loves to go at night. I mean, he's a very night guy because, you know, he doesn't really drink before shows. So he's going to party hard after him. So one night we go, let's go in the ocean later tonight. Go out there, little boys' night. Are we naked? Probably not. We could be. Some of us might be. Not gay stuff, just boys being naked. I wasn't naked. Not many people were naked. So we go out in the ocean. We start swimming. We're moving around. We're like, what the fuck's going on? And there's fucking plankton shimmering, dog. When you smack the water, it's glowing. Like fireworks everywhere. So we're swimming, we're laughing, blah, blah, blah. Next day, we go out on paddle boards, and we got the drone up there, and we're doing blah, 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 bullshit, promos, whatever, whatever. And then we look at the, we look at the video, because it's a drone, so it goes high in the air. And there's fucking hammerhead sharks everywhere. Yeah. Maybe the reason people aren't in the ocean is because there's hammerhead sharks. And maybe the reason that there's hammerhead sharks is because they're fucking plankton. Because fish eat plankton. Sharks eat the fish that eat the plankton. So, whatever. Tonight we just went to Jacksonville, did the show. It was okay. It wasn't my best set, but I did pretty good. Got to bring up my guy, Dave. Last but not least, I did an Everly Well thing. So if you guys don't know what Everly, it's not a promo for Everly Well, but it's an allergy test that they did like 300 for me, told me all the stuff I'm not healthy with, stuff you shouldn't be eating. Because, you know, my stomach feels fucked up. I got to go to the bathroom multiple times a day. And I'm wondering why. I'm wondering, is it my father's fault? Because he had the same thing, maybe. But then I look at it and they say I'm pretty much allergic to everything I eat. I'm allergic to wheat, not gluten. I'm allergic to garlic. I mean, that's I don't think I've ever eaten anything that didn't have garlic in it. Tuna. I eat tuna all the time. Not so. You guys should check that out. It's pretty interesting. One of my buddies was working on something like that. It just helps you, you know, help your stomach aches. All right, guys, that was part one of the podcast. Check out the next one coming out next week. Gonna love a little bit of Davey Dubs, a little bit of self done by myself. Why? Because Dave got too drunk. Couldn't finish the podcast. But if he didn't, I wouldn't be Dave. Guys, I love you. Thank you. Check out next week. Thank you. This is the World on Drugs Podcast, part one with the Zoom and Clan, Serbia's most violent lethal mafia. Bye.
Dave, welcome to the podcast, buddy. Appreciate it.
Happy to be here, Steve Fury.
So excited. We got some ribs on. We're in between shows. This one's very...
beef ribs. The biggest slab of beef ribs I've ever bought in my entire life.
Really?
Yeah, they're gigantic.
I mean, they're probably the most expensive.
That's why they're expensive. They're gigantic.
They were almost probably about $120.
Yeah.
For a slab of beef ribs. I would say this, though. I've said it before. Your beef ribs are my favorite thing I've ever eaten in my life.
Thanks, buddy. I can't even begin to tell you how much that means to me. And when I look at a price tag and I say, is it worth dropping some cash on if it's going to make someone's day? And then the answer is yes.
Oh, dude, it changed my life. Made my fucking day.
Do you want to, you know what I did last time I made beef ribs? I cooked for the Jim Jefferies podcast, actually.
Yeah, I saw and that. I was very jealous.
I was doing a brisket at the same time I was doing the beef ribs.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to trim a lot of fat off the brisket. So I took the fat and I put it in a pan and I put it in the smoker with everything else. So slowly over time, it rendered into like a meat tallow. So when the beef ribs were ready to be wrapped in butcher paper, I drizzled the fat, the meat tallow, on the onto the beef ribs, and then I wrapped them with the butcher paper. And then when it was over, I painted another little layer on. So it just had broke tallow it apart, all over the beef ribs. It was like next level, dude. It was like adding fat to fat. It was so good.
Yeah, I remember where I had your beef ribs the first time. I think it was Pennsylvania. At that one outdoor.
Oh, yeah. A really good drive-in theater we did.
Yeah, that was a cool one. There's like Whippet canisters everywhere on the ground.
It's that kind of a Jack and Diane kind of town.
Yeah, sucking on chili dogs and we're doing a podcast. So this one right now, I'm going to tell you all about the Serbian Mafia. Essentially, we're going to go from the beginning till the end of pretty much the Zuman clan. They were big guys. You wouldn't understand any of this until I'm going to tell you. It gets a little wordy, so feel free to read along. And or if you're just good at listening.
I'm just going to soak it in and react. Okay. This is somewhat fitting because right now we're touring with Bert. And Bert just spent a few months in Serbia.
Yep.
And we've been hearing a lot of stories about that. And then I'm a big water polo guy, and water polo is huge in Serbia. And I grew up in Miami, just so some mafia crime crazy shit always happens in Miami. So I feel like I can.
That's why we got you on here.
Threads through this.
Fantastic. I'm actually working on right now. I have one of my producers. We're working on a history of the Russian mafia to do with Bert next week.
Oh,
I think that'll be pretty cool. I was gonna do this one with him, but whatever. I think it'd be good with you.
I'll do the best again.
Oh, you're gonna do fantastic. So we'll just squish past that one, and we'll go start at. We'll start with some of the big players. Okay, some of the key people are Dusan Spasojevic. He is the main guy. He started the Zuman clan in Belgrade. He started as a Serbian football player, went to a petty criminal, worked his way up. Maja Lukovic.
Is that football like soccer or football soccer. Like our football? Okay.
Soccer. Maja Lukovic, he was a former prison guard, petty criminal. They started the Zuman clan together, kind of like you would be Miles Lukovic and Dusan Spasojevic would be Bert Kreischer.
Oh, like the right-hand man.
Right-handed, confidant.
Yeah, yeah. Got you.
Another guy is this guy, Milorad Legion Ulaminek. He is one of the most fucking... He's a war criminal. So what happened, right, is in a lot of these war-torn countries, when they, especially when Western Germany fell and Germany fell, there were a lot of these paramilitary groups that had nothing to do. And a lot of them joined up with... gangs and criminal enterprises.
Yeah, it's all they knew.
So then now those guys joined up with these guys, and these gangs now have guys that are fucking war criminals that know how to flay people and get information and do all this crazy shit.
Yeah, like they don't need to impart those like really intense skills, but they just like they just default. It's like if they were working like at a Home Depot and someone asked them a question, they would just start torturing someone for the answer. And it's like, hey, man, easy. Take it easy.
Well, that's it keeps happening in all these countries. You know, when it falls, these people then start taking their military grade intelligence and information and how to train people and how to take over a building. And they go to a gang and then they train everybody. And then
the cycle continues.
The cycle continues and gets even weirder. So we're going to go to the early life of Spasojevic and Lukovic, the two best friends, Dave and Bert.
Sounds like NBA players.
Yeah. They played on that Turkey team with Vlade Divac and Peja Stojakovic.
Yeah. Good passers.
July 16th, 1968. Dusan Spasojevic is born in a Serbian village of Retkošer outside of the city of Medveja.
You're killing these pronunciations.
You know what's crazy, man, is I have to look them all up beforehand. And so I sometimes get a little bit confused and forget them, but I'm pretty good at Yugoslavian, Serbian, and what's the left? Polish. But I get kind of fucked up when it goes to Russian. About a year later, on March 1st, 1969, Mil Lukovic is born in a small town outside of Medveja. 1986, Spasojevic and Lukovic complete their secondary education. They're becoming friends. They know each other.
They got a fine arts degree.
They're probably beating people up. They're probably they're probably the kids that sell candy bars in school. 1987, the pair leave their home villages. Spasojevic studies business at the Nikola Tesla Technical School in Medveja, and Lukovic becomes a prison guard in Kosovo.
Okay, that's a good job for him.
Not bad. You know, it's interesting the way... I really think that the way that their country devolved and broke down after it kind of like, the government collapsed, that was the kind of thing that sent these guys in different ways. Because really, Spasojevic wanted to be a soccer player and the other guy was just being a prison guard.
You know, everyone's got dreams, man. It's so funny. These little boys wanted to be soccer players or go do like real world things, and they get sucked into that violent path. And then that's who you are after that, you know?
Especially if you just weren't good enough to do what the thing you dreamed you wanted to do. And then someone's like, well, you can do this right now, man.
Yeah. You could either make a shit ton of money doing this or you can be poor chasing your dreams.
Oh, man. I'll join a gang right now. June 1989. Neighboring Hungary begins to dismantle its borders. Security with Austria. The Soviet influence in Southern Europe rapidly erodes. Summer of 1989. Spasojevic moves to Belgrade after completing his business trade school in November. Border checkpoints between East and West Germany are open. Soviet rule in Central Europe begins to collapse. Ethnic conflict flares across Yugoslavia and communist regime. Also, so this is going to be a lot of information that's kind of boring. There's a little thing right there afterwards that'll be a synopsis that's kind of more like a story of what
a synopsis.
A synopsis.
It's a Vietnamese synopsis.
I got it.
Okay. 1990s, Spaso Hivic immigrates to Germany to play football professionally. I got a small feeling that's not going to work out. March 31st, 1991, Croatia declares independence from Yugoslavia, a very big moment. Slovenia follows shortly afterwards, followed by Bosnia. War erupts across the region. The reason this is big is because Yugoslavia and all these countries start to do a lot of that old ethnic cleansing that area of the world likes to do.
Yeah, okay.
So, with all these wars erupting between past allies, what's a friendship that you lost and why?
Well, you know, I would say I could pinpoint. I have two friendships that kind of ended this way, but one specifically where it was a dude who was like a sociopath, you know, and it never bothered me. See, I don't know if it's a flaw or a strength, but I'm the kind of guy where people who have a hard time making friendships are drawn towards me.
You're also very kind, and you look past people's kind of faults.
Yeah, man, it doesn't bother me. Like, I try to look for the good in everybody, if that makes sense, you know? And I could see, like, the value in knowing someone or being friends with them, even if it's not easy to find. I don't mind tooting my own horn with that.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy specifically, but earlier in my life, I think someone who's a sociopath or a bad person, I would have maybe made excuses for them. Later in life, I recognize it's a thing, and I'm still okay with it as long as you don't use it to take advantage of me.
Yeah.
But this one guy, I was very kind to him and his family, and he just kept taking advantage of me and taking advantage of me and taking advantage of me. And finally, the point where it was like I was insulted because it felt like he thought I was stupid. Where it's like, man, if you're just like, if you need something and if I can help you, then just be straight up with me, man. But when you're costing me money or costing me time because you're lying to me, that's when it burns me, you know?
Yeah, it feels like I'm helping you because it's out of the kindness of my heart, not because you think you're tricking me into helping you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It was like he always lied about things that didn't matter. So I didn't fault him for that. I'm like, oh, that's what he's got to tell himself or tell me to feel like he's valuable. So it never bothered me. But I was like, the second you're trying to lie to me because you think that I'm buying it and you're getting something from me, now I'm like, I don't need you in my life anymore, man. I don't have enough time or money for my own family. I can't put another for you. So that's one. It was one of the first, and I'm super burned by that because I don't get upset about people very often. Cause like I said, I don't mind being a punching bag to make someone else feel good about their life. But it got to the point where it really bothered me, and it was one of the first times I felt really burned by somebody, you know?
I mean, you're definitely one of the guys that I would say one of the best hangs, one of the worst people to talk shit with.
Well, I will stop you there. If you get enough beers in me, dude, I get super blunt and honest, okay. And you know this. So I do think people like when I talk shit with them because I don't do it often.
It's hard
you're
to do
right.
It exactly. Means
but if you get me on the right person or the right tangent, I will go down a rabbit hole. But I probably will always do it with like in a way where I'm like, but I love him. Dude, I love that guy. I love him so much. But
it's like a joke when you're like, you know.
He's kind of an asshole.
When you build him up to cut him down.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Dusan Spaso Hivic was born on July 6, 1968 in the village of Retkošir in what was then the Socialist
Beautiful place.
Beautiful. Republic of Yugoslavia. Who doesn't want to go to the Yugo?
Great water polo team, by the way.
I could see that. You know.
No idea.
Oh, maybe. I wouldn't doubt it. These fucking Eastern European Slavic guys are always a lot bigger and more athletic than we really think.
Well, that's why they're so good at water polo, dude, is because over there, water polo is the main sport. So Hungary and Croatia and Serbia, like the LeBron James of those countries that grew up there, they all start playing water polo when they're like 6 years old. Where here, it's like our best athletes go to like 20 other sports, and then the ones that are left kind of find water polo, you know?
Well, that's why I always think everyone's other soccer teams are so good. And it's like, yeah, that's the only thing you got.
Yeah.
Soccer's like our fifth thing.
Like if LeBron James like started playing water polo when he was five, we'd have an awesome national team.
Also, if you guys don't know, he's a very big water polo coach.
I let them know
and has a water polo podcast.
The Tony Acevedo podcast with Dave Williamson.
Located on Serbia's border with Kosovo, Retkošice is a small town, population about 100, of ethnic Serbs, where his father was a miner, his mother was a housekeeper. As a boy, he met Mile Lukovic and attended school together throughout the 1980s. Mile Lukovic was born on the 1st of July, 1969, in a small Serbian town of Donji, Gajdan, outside of Medvej...
Killing it.
Medjevda. Okay, I'm going to read
Medjevda.
So I'm going to yet when I do that, it allows me to go back and edit because I see a huge spike. Outside of Medjevda. After finishing their post-secondary education, the friends decided to leave their hometown while Lukovic traveled south to the city of Pristina in Kosovo, where he worked as a prison guard. Spasojevic studied first at a business school and then went north, moving to the Yugoslavian Serb capital of Belgrade in 1989. Dave.
Yeah.
Who was your best friend as a kid? And do you still know him?
Oh, man. Yeah, dude. My oldest friend is Lenny Beers.
Love that name.
Yeah, man. I'm the only one who calls him Lenny. Everyone calls him Lenny. He's a professional now, so everyone calls him Leonard. But I'm like, you'll always be Lenny to me.
Don't Lenny Beers. Yeah. Sounds like a cartoon character.
But my father, who's technically my stepdad, but I consider him my dad. He adopted me very young, married my mom. But so when my mom and him started dating, my father was roommates with Lenny's dad.
Oh, cool.
And Lenny's comes from a split family too. So so it's funny because Lenny's parents were divorced and my parents were dating. So the two dads were bachelors who lived together. So they used to get babysitters for us and when they'd go out for double dates.
And then you guys were hanging out together.
Yeah, so we've been friends since we were 2 years old, man. And he's still my buddy to this day. And he's my accountant.
Nice. Shout out to Lenny Beers.
Yeah, man. If you're in South Florida and need some help, he's actually, I live in California. He takes care of all my life insurance and all that and all my account. So he's gotten really good at taking care of comedians' finances.
Yeah, yeah. I got one buddy right now that was a buddy of mine. He was always valedictorian, and he's an accountant, but I'm too embarrassed for him to be my accountant.
Yeah. Dude, I feel that, but I didn't care. I'm like, Lenny knows.
Yeah.
So, but I've hooked him up a lot of my comedian friends, actually, because people are always looking for help. And I'm like, hey, man, Lenny won't judge you. He's taken care of my shit for years.
In Belgrade, Spasojevic embarked on a football soccer career. Though successful enough to play at the lower leagues, he failed to advance the national teams and turned his career into a profession. Dejected, Spasojevic took advantage of the chaos stemming from the collapse of the Soviet rule in Eastern, Central, and Southern Europe. So he migrated to Germany, a site for many refugees across the Eastern Bloc.
Cool.
Again, Spasojevic tried to embark on a football career, but by 1993, with his career relegated to local clubs and leagues, he returned empty-handed to Belgrade. Living with his girlfriend Tanja, upon his return, Spasojevic soon was married. Upon the birth of his child, he invited Lukovic to be his godfather. Lukovic readily accepted, and following the child's confirmation, he decided to stay in Belgrade with Spasojevic. So this is like two buddies, both went on their own ways, came back over the birth of Spasojevic. Serbia will never be the same again. This child's birth and having these guys come back together.
He's like, Jesus.
Yeah. So here's a good one. Who's one of your best friends right now, and how do y'all meet?
Oh, man. Wow.
Say Bert, because I'm gonna got a Bert question later.
All right. No, but it's hard. What goes through my brain is I'm like, whoever I say, someone else is going to be insulted. But I would say one of my best friends right now. I mean, my best friends. I mean, is it cheesy to say my wife?
That's no.
Cheesy, right?
I mean, is it cheesy? Yeah, but you know, I'm going to have so many more questions about friends. That still works.
Yeah. I mean, my wife, I met her in college and.
Well, she went to Auburn too.
Yeah. Wow, she was cool. One of the first people that I dated that was like a friend, not just like a chick,
yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Like every chick I dated before that was like, you know, they were like a girly girl. So it was like, I was all about it. You know, just I was attracted to them, but it was like they were like to take out somewhere and like why not? My wife, I was like, oh man, she's fun to like watch SportsCenter with or go to a football game with, and I think she's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, now we've been together over 20 years, and I mean, when you get to be in your 40s and you're married, I have two kids, and it might be equally as cheesy, but my boys are old enough now. I got two sons,
mm-hmm.
so they're old enough now to be like
more like friends than just kids, you know. Like my oldest son's a freshman on the high school water polo team that I'm an assistant coach on, so I get to see him every day and coach him. And my youngest son's just super into the barbecue and building shit, so it's like I have connection points with both of them. So it's kind of cool being at this point in my life where like your family is your friends, you know. I mean, I got a lot of friends out there. I'm very lucky, man. One thing in my life, no matter what, is I've always had great friends.
Probably because you're a good friend.
I'd be a try, man. I definitely try. But high school, college, you know, through any job I've ever had, comedy, I've always had great friends, man. And it's cool that, you know, I learned that during the pandemic, man. I was like, a month or two in, I go, man, I'm so glad I like my family. I'm not like you get those people who are like, you know, like protesting in certain, they're like rich and they're, I mean, you're in your mansion and you're protesting because you probably can't stand like just seeing your spouse every day.
Or so many people divorce during the pandemic.
Yeah, it definitely accelerated one way or the other. You either realized you really love your family or more importantly, like them, because you could love them and tolerate them. But when you got to spend every day, all day with them, you better like them.
I would say, you know what, man? I would say, you know, keep mine corny, too. I finally have a girl that I always – that feels like – it doesn't feel like – you know, honestly, every woman I ever dated, I always kind of had, like, something on the back burner. Or like I feel, a, yeah. You know, right, and I was like yeah. – I was like, this is not going to be it.
Talking food.
Yeah, I'm not talking food. Right. I'm like, this isn't going to be
it. You got a backup plan.
I got a backup plan always.
You got a plan B, no pun intended.
Exactly. But now I feel like I'm dating someone who's legitimately on my team. And then my dad, like you've heard my joke, I was the best man at three of his weddings. So I can see that he's your best friend, too. So let's push it forward.
Cool.
1993 to 1995 with the Pekka group in the Serkin clan. So clans in Serbia are gangs, mafias, separate mafias. 1993, Spasojevic leaves Germany for Belgrade. He marries and has a child. Lukovic joins him in Belgrade, and the two begin a criminal career in auto theft for the Pekka group. In Eastern Europe, in this kind of area right here, auto theft is a huge thing. It's like they steal it, and they can bring it to a different country and resell it, or they'll steal it and do it for ransom. 1995, Spasojevic and Lukovic join the Kumet clan, a Serbian crime syndicate in Belgrade. The pair are arrested for auto theft. That doesn't really matter. This Kumet clan, huge. This is going to be something that's going to be for the rest of us.
All right, that's big time, huh?
Dave, did you ever belong to a fraternity or a group of friends, gang thing, and was there any hazing or anything like that?
Well, in college, I thought about rushing a fraternity, but I was on the water polo team, and that kind of became Perfect. My fraternity, which was cooler, man, because I feel like when you join a frat, you tend to gravitate towards a frat that are made up of people that are like you.
Yeah.
But with water polo, it was like dudes who were totally from different parts of the country. Like, there were guys I wouldn't have hung out with if we didn't have water polo in common. But because we had water polo in common, we became best friends, and we partied together. We were all roommates. And then later in my college career, we even got, like, houses, kind of like a frat house. We had water polo houses. So it was like, you know, we had six or seven teammates living in a house together.
And also, you know, sports teams are better than frats because you don't pay to be on a sports team.
You pay with your blood, sweat, and tears.
And it's almost, and what bonds you together isn't that you paid to be in a group. It's that going through things and having each other's backs.
Yeah, man. No, totally, dude. But I feel like humanity in general is based on being part of a community. That's why fraternities exist. And, you know, comedy's that way, dude. Like, when you do a weekend with somebody, and, like, there's so many comics out there, you might not bond with someone just because you meet them at the bar and they're also a comic. But when you happen to be scheduled for a weekend.
And you're both.
There's an MC, a middle, and a headliner, and you guys make it through a successful weekend. You guys are bonded for life. Mm-hmm. Like, you had that one weekend together, and now you are friends. Even if you don't like each other, you still have, like, that thing in common.
And the worst is when you sometimes – this is a big thing I always found in L.A. When you'd connect with a headliner, and then you'd come – before I came to L.A., and then I'd come to L.A., and they'd ask, like, they didn't know you. And you'd be like, bro, we got dinner five nights in a row till 4 a.m.
When you needed me because you were lonely in Sacramento.
I was picking you the fuck up. Ain't no goddamn way you don't know who the fuck I am, bro.
I used to always do that, man, because I had a my dad was in the car business, actually, speaking of auto theft. Mm-hmm. I've got some good auto theft stories, actually. So, you know, my dad's business had tickets to the Miami Heat and the Dolphins and stuff. And you know, I had access to stuff at that point when I was just starting to MC at all the local improvs. So when I was opening for a headliner who was in town, I'd always be like, hey, man, do you want to go to the Dolphins game on Sunday or do you want to go to the Heat game on Saturday? So, or there's a food and wine festival in town. You want me to come pick you up and take you because I know you get lonely sitting in the hotel room. So, like, I really connected with a lot of guys by just doing stuff like that and you know, trying to make sure that they weren't sitting on their ass bored.
That's a great way to get in. With Spasohivich's family to support and having failed in other ventures, they've embarked on careers as petty criminals. Working for a low-level thief only known as Pekka, they begin by stealing, breaking into cars, and then extorting the owners for the return of the cars. As the Eastern Bloc collapse, Yugoslavia begins to unravel, with each of the constituted republics breaking away and forming their own nations. Civil war and ethnic violence ensue, and in the overwhelmed Yugoslavia hospitals, they honed a notorious method of theft by stealing the vehicles and possessions of visiting family members and then holding them for ransom. So these guys would go to a hospital, steal someone's car and valuables in the hospital because they're visiting their family all weekend and they have all their shit in there. And then they'd hold it for ransom. So just like the most awful people of all time. What was one of the worst people you've ever met?
Well, I'll stick to the theme.
Okay. You can do it. If you got a bad family member, you
just... No. The things you just read.
Oh, car theft?
Yeah. Okay, cool. So my family's in the car business, man, down in South Florida. And there were people who I considered family who were employees of ours for years, right? People I had at my house for dinner parties and stuff, right? And then you'd find out...
You can keep talking. I'm on check.
Yeah. You would find out that they were stealing you or scamming the dealership or something, you know? So there's people that worked for us who I considered family. And, you know, it doesn't mean they're bad people, but whatever reason, they were desperate. Their back was against the wall. They made a bad decision. You know, try to do scams, I'd go to them, and I'd be, after they got caught, and I'd be like, hey, man, this isn't like, not that it would be okay, but just use the same example I already used, like Home Depot, where it's a nationwide company, and you stole a stapler. I go, it's my family, man. Yeah. Like, this is like, you're like taking money from me, you know? So that really hurt. But I spent one summer growing up in the dealership. So we had, one of the lines of cars we had was Saturns. In 1 year, people realized that you could take a butter knife or just regular scissors and shove them into the ignition cylinder and then pop all the tumblers by just, you crank the ignition on just like that, just ka-ka with that. So people, gangs and teenagers and stuff were just stealing Saturns rampantly that summer, just taking them for joyrides, right? So when I was like 14 or 15 years old, one of my summer jobs 1 year was all the Saturns that came in as being recovered from thefts. I would have to take the lock cylinder out and rebuild it and put it back in. And then we would get to go into the trunk, and anything that was left by the theft, the thief, I could keep because we were supposed to clean it out of the car for them. So I was 14 or 15 years old, and I got brass knuckles, Playboys, you know, bats. There was like all kinds of Chinese throwing stars, knives. There was all this shit that I was just like, oh, I'm keeping this.
That's hilarious, dude. That's so funny to have all that stuff. I got something just like that. When I was, at the time I was still dealing drugs, and I was with this girl, and we were going to go into San Francisco for the weekend, right? So if you're from Sacramento and you're going to San Francisco, you're kind of bringing all your nicest stuff, right? Because you want to shine bright.
Okay.
So we get into there.
Like the big city.
The big city, exactly. We get in there. I got an ounce of weed in a jar. And also she's going to go and we're going to spend the weekend there. She's going to watch me do stand-up. It's going to be a big thing for us. We're kind of dating, ready to go in the girlfriend thing. We get there, and the first night we're watching a Stevie Nicks cover band open for a Tom Petty cover band in a rock club. Fun time, right? That's a good time.
That's a great time.
Yeah, that's a great time. Park the car, go to the show, have an excellent time. We're even kissing in public, something I don't like to do.
Yeah.
Come back to the
Even with someone on the back burner.
Yeah, there's a couple of people on the back burner at this time. We get home, or we're walking back to my car, and I'm walking back to the car, and I see a gentleman looking at my car right outside. And I get closer, and I realize he's wearing one of my hats.
Oh, all right. He was still hanging out at the scene of the crime.
Yeah, yeah. I get up there and I go, yo, what's going on? And he goes, don't worry about it. There's still stuff in there we can take.
And he thought you were going to help him steal your car?
I'm freaking out. I kick him. I'm kind of like kicking him out of here. Get out of here. The guy runs away. He smashed our windows, all my windows, stole all of our clothes.
Oh, man.
All of my weed.
And was he a crackhead?
What he left was a loaded crack pipe and a full bottle of RD-151.
That was the other thing, too, man. When these cars came in, you could tell, like, people, like, there was burn marks in this in the roof, you know, the felt and everything. Like, they people just, like, partied in there.
Yep. And we never made it after that because we were supposed to be out for 3 days. Yeah. I immediately drove home.
You were free-falling.
Dude, drove home at 1:30 in the morning with no windows. It was freezing cold.
Just glass shards to you.
No one was talking to anybody. So they're holding cars for ransom, and this soon escalates into drug dealing, and Spasojevic supplants Pekka as the leader of this group. Spasojevic gradually earned a reputation in Serbian underworld for his criminal activity, becoming nicknamed the Albanian by Serbian criminals.
I like that.
Yeah, that's a scary one.
The Albanian.
For his hometown's proximity to the border of Albania and Kosovo. Though he and Lukovic are Serbs, they do have connections with the Albanians from their home region. What begins as a small racketeering operation escalates into a regional drug distribution business, with Spasojevic and Lukovic purchasing drugs from their Albanian connections and selling them in Belgrade. Both this and their auto theft ring, which now had several employees, bring them the attention of Labisa Buha Kumit, the leader of that thing we talked about, the powerful
Kumit gang,
Kumit
right?
clan, yeah. as a Serbian, which is essentially the head of the Serbian mafia.
Mm.
Spasojevic was nicknamed the Albanian, fantastic nickname, even though he was an Albanian. What's some nicknames you've had, and how'd you get them?
Oh, dude, I had so many nicknames. It's funny, my nicknames are always like adjectives that go before Dave, too. So, like, when I was young, I was really into spearfishing growing up in Miami. Mm-hmm. So, they called me Grouper Dave because I was really good at shooting groupers. So, I was Grouper Dave. I was U-turn Dave when I worked for Red Bull after college because I used to always bust U-turns in the little Red Bull car when we were driving around. I've been Miami Dave. When I moved away from Miami, I just oozed Miami because I'd wear wife beater undershirts and no one had seen that before at Auburn University, and gold hoop earrings, which I've brought back for this tour and I'm wearing right now, and my shark tooth necklace, which I brought back for this Florida run on the tour, and I had frosted tips, so people just called me Miami Dave. People who know me from water polo but aren't in water polo, I call me water polo. It's always an adjective. And now I'm Meat Dave because of the barbecue thing. My podcast is Meat Dave, so everyone calls me Meat Dave. The little kid next door calls me Neighbor Dave. It's always something plus Dave.
What's your favorite one you've gotten?
I mean, Meat Dave's been pretty fun, to be
meat
honest.
Dave's pretty good, too.
I was at the emergency room for my eye the other day at like midnight, and the valet, I walked outside because I didn't want to wait in the waiting room with all the sick people. And I'm out there just freezing my ass off with a mask on and a blanket around me. And the valet guy comes up to me and goes, Meet Dave. And I go, who are you? And he's like, I recognize you. He's like, I live in your part of town. I see you smoking out in the front yard all the time. Smoking meat. I go, all right, man. That's pretty impressive, actually.
So other than Fury, my nickname I've gotten was Scuba. And the reason I got this nickname was because
there Big Daddy, right?
Yes, I got it from that, but the way I got it was when I was selling drugs, there was a gang guys that I would work with. I was more of, they were in a gang. I was kind of like, I described it as they were Earth and I was a moon. I wasn't really in the gang, but I bought stuff from them, and if I ever had a problem.
You were gang adjacent.
I was gang adjacent, right?
Yeah.
And if you're ever in one of these things, you know they give nicknames. So they gave me the nickname Scuba Steve. And that was essentially how I got that nickname.
I dressed up like Scuba Steve for Halloween one year, and it was so impressive. I made the whole outfit myself.
Well, you have to own all that stuff. You go scuba diving all the time.
Well, yeah, but I got I went and got yellow tights.
Nice.
And then I put a red Speedo over them.
Nice.
And I got 3 liter. I didn't even know they made 3 liter Pepsi bottles. And I wrapped them in construction paper to make the tanks on my straps. And then, I wore a red goggles. I mean, I looked awesome and I made the whole thing myself.
That's so cool. All right.
I'm really good at Halloween.
Yeah. I've never really, other than being a kid, I never really did anything great. Pekka had been an employee of Kumit, and Kumit extended an invitation to more closely work together despite having been arrested in 1999 for car theft. Buha, though young, made a fortune smuggling cars out of war zones of Croatia, Bosnia, and Slovenia. Through the relationship with Buha, both the car theft ring and their drug dealing enterprises grow. Though they now work for Buha, Spasojevic continues to expand the number of thieves, drug dealers, and forces that reportedly direct to him. Such is their success that in 1996, with the purchase of two estates in Zumin, a suburb of Belgrade, that they become known as the Zumin clan. So they went the Kumet to the Zumin clan. Schiller Street and the Central Road in Zumin became their central headquarters.
Meeting Buhan, a high-ranking member in the criminal underworld, changed their lives. I'd say Bert changed ours. Dave, what, when, how was the first time you met Bert? We're coming in hot after the second show, guys.
Yeah. Full disclosure, we just took a break and have drinking multiple beers with dinner and second show.
And eating, now, second show, multiple beers. We fought with each other.
The podcast the podcast from here on out is going to have a very different feel to it. That was a great segue, Steve, by the way. Bert's changed our lives. How do you feel?
You know, that's what I kind of do. I'd get a weird, very wordy podcast, and I bring it in with stories from people.
You just want to ask people personal stuff, but you hide it with mafia talk.
Yeah, bore them with Criminal Underground.
Yeah, man. I met Bert over 10 years ago when I was still living in Miami. I was working a day job at the dealership. I was doing comedy on the side. And I was lucky enough to be in an area where there was multiple improvs, because we had the Miami, Fort Lauderdale.
Now there's none.
No, they're there. They've all closed and moved and reopened and whatever. But they're back to having three in that area now. There's very different from when I was there. But we had one in Coconut Grove, which is Miami. We had one at the Hard Rock, which is where we'll be at a theater next weekend. But it was a comedy club back then. And then there was the West Palm Improv, which is still there. And then there was also Captain Brian's off the comedy club over in Marco Island, which is about a 2-hour drive over to the Everglades. So I was lucky. There was 4 A rooms that I could get MC or feature work at and go to work all day and then change my shirt in my office and haul ass to whatever club I was working. So it was funny because you start to, with that many clubs, you start kind of working with the same guys over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know, you get to know them.
They start asking for you to open for them because they know
you. Even if you don't open for them, like, you know, it's the same dudes and like your buddy's opening for them. So you go have a beer with them. You get to know everybody. And for whatever reason, I didn't meet Bert for a while after he was working all those clubs. And then just one weekend randomly, I was booked to Middle for him up in West Palm. And I went up and immediately got along with the dude, you know? And I'm the kind of guy still to this day that I don't say no to shit. Like, if someone goes, hey, man, I want to go have beers, even if I got to drive 2 hours back to my house, help my wife with my newborn baby, and then go open up the car dealership at 8 a.m., I'm going to go have a beer, man, and get to know people and have some human interaction. So
that's a huge thing in this business, is just making the interludes into conversation and relationships.
It's a huge thing in life, man.
Yep.
Life, I don't care what you're into, man. Life is about people. You know, comedy, barbecue, sports, water polo, everything is about people, bro. Yeah. So, yeah, I just really enjoyed spending time with Bert. So I was like, yeah, man, let's go grab some beers. So just enjoyed hanging with him all weekend, man. And that first weekend, he would go out on stage. He, you know, because he wasn't famous like he is now. I mean, he was doing well. He was headlining 8 rooms. But he'd go out on stage. He had a bucket of Heineken waiting for him on stage. He'd rip his shirt off. They'd play Black Betty. He'd chug a Heineken, like the whole thing. But now he doesn't really drink much on stage until he's through his set.
He doesn't drink before his spot, really.
So back then, he would just like bottoms up a Heineken to start his set, right? And we'd do like 3 shows a night.
And was he doing numbers then?
You know, he was doing all right. Not like now.
Yeah, obviously. But he was almost selling out clubs.
I mean, he was a good headliner. Yeah. He was a strong, because he had the Travel Channel stuff, you know. But he would do really well with selling booze for the club. That was his philosophy. He's like, if I'm drinking on stage, they're going to join the party.
Yeah.
The club's going to have a good weekend because they're selling booze, you know. So I worked with him that weekend. And then, I remember we were in the green room, and he goes, man, I do this thing where I take my shirt off. And I go, yeah, I saw you, man. The crowd loves it. They go crazy. And then after about 10 minutes, he'd be like, sorry, you have to look at my fat belly, and he'd put his shirt back on or whatever, right? And he's like, but I don't know if I want to keep doing that, man, because I don't want to be known as the guy who takes his shirt off and people think I'm not a good comic. And boy, he went the other way, dude.
Yeah.
I'm so glad he leaned into it, because it's just such a part of who he is. And it's not like all the things he was worried about aren't true. Like, you know, he didn't let that stop him from being unique, and it ended up being a very positive thing, you know?
I mean, it sets off the party every time he... When he walks on a stage and takes off his shirt, that crowd loses its fucking mind.
Here's when I noticed the power in it is when I was doing clubs with him, right? So I opened for him here and there over, you know, the span of years, mostly just because we made sense together and clubs would pair us up.
Yeah.
And we always had fun. And then when I moved to LA, and then years later, he was helping me out with my festival and doing a live podcast at the festival I run.
This was only a couple years ago, 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So then he goes, hey, man, do you want to do some club dates with me? And I go, yeah, because I guess he was getting to the point where he was cool bringing his own openers mm-hmm. and stuff. So I'd go like maybe once a month with him and do a weekend somewhere, right? So I saw all these guys. He'd always do the meet and greet after it. He'd sit there and take a picture with every single fan who wanted to take a picture with him. And there's all these fat dudes in like Wisconsin and Washington State, whatever, that would take their shirt off and take a picture with him and immediately post it to social media. And I go, man, Bert, I go, this is going to sound cheesy, but it's kind of sweet. It's like empowering. Like these dudes haven't taken their shirt off at a pool party mm-hmm. since they were 12 years wow. old. I go, and you make them proud wow. to take their shirt off, take a picture with you, and they cannot wait to post on their Instagram and show all their buddies that they got their shirt, got a picture taken with their shirt off at the machine,
mm-hmm.
and they're proud of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought it was really cool, man. They empowered.
They empowered the overweight guy to be proud about who they are, and that you yeah. can be just. I mean, because that's the thing. The difference between I'm not gonna speak for you, but if I went on stage and took my shirt off, I would have a panic attack.
Yeah, I mean,
it would be a fucking nightmare.
I've been a dude my whole life has been voyeuristic as far as like wearing Speedos. You were asking about nicknames earlier. When I did sketch comedy in my early 20s, my nickname was Speedo Dave because I would try to write myself wearing a Speedo into every sketch. It was honestly my first little taste of the entertainment industry fame because I was more famous in that little bubble than I am now because we're in Charlotte, North Carolina. We had this really popular little sketch comedy group. That's when I got my start in comedy. And I'd take my girlfriend, who's now my wife, out to lunch. And the waitress would be like, excuse me, are you Speedo Dave? And I'd be like, yes, I am. Just because I would take rip my breakaway pants off and have a Speedo in every sketch.
That's a little bit of the way he feels when he takes off his shirt. You get a little bit of that nectar that you feel. People just lose their mind for that kind of thing.
So, yeah. So then Bert started doing the theaters and he asked me if I wanted to go do theaters with him. And, you know, then you become really close with someone because you're on the tour bus 24/7. And yeah, man, he definitely has been a blessing. And more than anything, man, and I think you feel this way too, Steve, is that it's cool to do shows and it's cool to have work, but the real blessing is watching Bert work because he is a hard worker. He's very business-minded, and I've learned so much from the way he goes about his business, and it's stuff I can actually use because I have a lot of the same sensibilities as Bert. Like, it's a lot of stuff where I go, oh, yeah, man, I feel that. I could do that. You know, so it's just been really valuable for me and my career and a blessing for my family.
Yeah, I mean, this, I don't mean to sound rude, but some people are like, you know, he's just a drunk guy who takes off his shirt and does it. It's like, you're so fucking off. This man is the hardest working person I've ever met all day, every day. If we're doing an activity, it's 10% to do an activity, not 90% so that he can have content to put on his YouTube and to put on his Instagram.
But in an authentic way, not in a gross way.
No, completely.
He's the dude who figured out, because I think everyone, because comics, we want to be authentic. I think a lot of people were worried about being like gross with marketing, you know?
Yeah.
Because they had to be edgy and cool and hip. But Bert found a way to make marketing fun and cool and acceptable.
And game changing. Yeah. I mean, that's the best thing of going with him is I've been like, okay, comedy isn't just go up there and be funny and hopefully something happens. That's maybe 5% of it.
I mean, it's the main part of it, but there's thousands of people that can do that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have the other stuff too.
1995 to 1997, the emergence of the Zoo Man Clan. So the Zoo Man guys took over the
Zoot Suit Riot.
Yeah, they took over the let's do this real quick. So those guys took over the Kumet and they now created the Zoo Man Clan. Mid 1996 to early 1997, Spasojevic and Lukovic begin dealing drugs purchased by the Albanian syndicates, and they start conducting their first murders. That's pretty big. Good for them. August 22nd, 1997, the pair kidnap and torture a 17-year-old Novak Stenovic. His ransom includes 9 pounds of jewelry and 60 German marks. Stenovic commits suicide shortly after. I love the 9 pounds of just loose jewelry. With comedy and other things, you can sometimes get paid in weird things ways. Dave,
What's one of the weirdest things you've been paid to complete a task or comedy?
I don't know if it was an arranged way to get paid, but I'm certainly getting a lot of free barbecue rubs and hot sauces and barbecue sauces in the mail now. Like, everyone wants to send me that kind of stuff. My wife's like, stop, we don't have room. And I'm like, it's free shit, babe, and I want to try it all. You know? So I even get free meat sent to me.
Yeah, so that
the barbecue rep is paying off in that regard.
I mean, you take it. I mean, I was with you when you were 8,000 and I was 5. And then,
followers on Instagram.
On followers on Instagram. And now, year and a half later, I'm at 10.2. Very happy for that. And you're almost at 30. And it's very cool.
Yeah, I'm at 29. Woohoo!
And you work your ass off, and you should get that.
So this is a little different from that question.
Okay.
But one time I did a show, and it was a random Tuesday night at that Off the Hook comedy club I would mentioned, which is over in Marco Island, Florida, which is a bizarre place to begin with. And I was opening for Jim Brewer, two-man show, a Tuesday night. He sold it out, right? So I do my set, bring Jim up. I'm going to the bathroom.
Tuesday.
And this lady walks up to me and goes, oh, my God, you're the comedian. I go, yeah, how are you? You're so great. Thank you so much. And she's like, wouldn't stop talking to me. And I go, we don't want to interrupt our show. Just say hi after and we'll talk. Cool. So she immediately comes up to me after Brewer's done, right? And she just corners me. And she was a really pretty but very tall and intimidating black woman, like very strong, like Serena Williams type woman, right? Jewelry, obviously very well off, right? She just wouldn't stop like talking to me and telling me how her husband's got a bar and we should go to that bar. And I work that club all the time, so I'm like, well, I'd love to know someone who owns a bar in the area. That'd be
You're
cool.
very good at doing that.
But I go, you know what? I can't tonight. I have work tomorrow. I have a baby at home. I have to drive across the Everglades, so I'm not drinking tonight. You know, I'm like, thank you. Nice to meet you. Maybe we can, you know, hang out in the future. I'm like, but no. Meet my husband. And she pulls her husband over, and he looked like Dog the Bounty Hunter, right? He's like, whatever, you know? And so then she's like, yeah, you should come see our bar. My husband built it. He's a contractor. It's in the back of our house by our pool. And I go, oh, she's trying to get me to go to her house, right? And I'm like, oh, I see what's going on here. And then she started making it more and more obvious, right? So then I kept declining. Her last ditch effort was she took her purse and she shoves it into my gut. I was like, ugh. She goes, can you hold my purse for a minute? I'm like, what the fuck? And she's like, sorry if my purse is heavy. I always carry a couple thousand bucks in cash in case I see something I want.
Whoa.
And I just dropped the purse and was like, I got to call my wife, tell her I'm not coming home. No, I'm just kidding.
I know. That one would have been hard. I got paid way more than probably even the headliner did that weekend. Just go bang out.
These people could have overpowered me, though, if they wanted to murder me or some shit, dude.
In some fucking Everglades?
Yeah, my body would be floating in the swamp, dude. Yeah, that was bizarre, man. That was bizarre.
My weirdest one, Northern California, I've been paid with a shit ton of marijuana. Just the more than you could even smoke. Late 1997, Spasohivich and Lukovic are again arrested for auto theft. They become police informants, reporting...
Saturns.
Yeah, they start putting that old butter knife in the ignition trick. Reporting the movements of Albanian criminals and rebels to the southern Yugoslavia.
That was about the year.
Yep. Dave, have you ever ratted on someone? If so, what about?
Oh. Damn.
Here, I'll do one first.
Yeah.
You think about it.
I'm sure
listen
I have.
To me. I used to, when I was selling drugs with those guys that were kind of the sun or the earth and I was the moon, what I could do is I could find out where other drug dealers lived and I could tell them that's where they
live. Oh, you're a prison snitch.
And then they would go rob them and then give me some of their drugs.
Sixth grade, I was in the magnet program where
Flex.
I had always been like in the suburban schools, like the little bubble of Miami, Florida at that time. Sixth grade, me and all my buddies wanted to go to this school that we were in the magnet program, and it was in Goulds, Florida, which is a very rough part of Miami, Florida, right?
Okay.
So one day, I get into a fight with my best friend at the time, and he happens to be walking down the hallway like 20 feet in front of me, and this kid comes out of the bathroom and knocks into him, and they have an altercation. Well, I see this as an opportunity to make it up to my friend and be a good friend, or whatever. Mm-hmm. I go up there and I go, hey, man, watch out where you're going. I go, I don't know why you're yelling at him. You're the one who ran it. And I was being a tough guy, right?
Yeah, trying to help him out.
Oh, this guy looks at me and he's like, all right, bro. So now, like 2 days later, I made up with my friend. It was water under the bridge. We go to leave our science class. And I look outside and I see that guy and like six other dudes waiting for us.
Uh-oh.
And I go, oh, man. I go, what's... I grab my buddy and I pull him back in the room. I go, dude, we can't go out there. That guy wants to kick our butt. And he's like, why? I'm like, what do you mean, why? Because I was standing up for you, bro.
It's not your fault.
So we sneak out the back door and we're trying to like weave our way through the hallway. And then they see us like, there's those gringos. And they come running after us. We go running. And our next classroom was in the corner of the school. And we get there and we're like, ah, suckers. And we go to open the door and it was locked. And there was a sign on the door that said, meet in the library today. We were like, oh, we're fucked. So these guys circle us and they all start speaking Spanish. And now I'm trying to be like, hey guys, everything's cool, right? And then they start talking in Spanish, like, and I look over here and I look over here and I look over here. And when I go back here, I get sucker punched right in my temple. And then my initial reaction was to fight back, even though I was going to get demolished. And I start chasing them down the hallway as they're running away. And I was like lightheaded. So I ran straight into a wall. So I jacked my face up myself. I go home. My mom sees my face, goes, what happened? And I got to tell her. And my mom was not going to stand for that. So she goes down to the school the next day and says, has a closed door meeting with the principal. And then he comes out and gets a police officer and goes, you're going to go into the cafeteria in front of the whole student body and point these guys out. And I'm like, you guys.
You had to do that in front of everybody?
Yeah, I had to snitch them out, dude.
Oh,
I go, you guys are going to make this way worse.
Wow. All right.
So I did. I go in there, and I pointed the kid out, and they pull the kid into the office. And the principal, who's usually a very mild-mannered man, was like, he says this to the kid. He's like, boy, I know that you are less than one strike away to go into juvie hall for a long time. He's like, I'm not going to send you there right now, even though I could. He goes, instead, I'm going to make sure that nobody ever touches this boy in my school again. If anybody messes with this boy, I'm going to make sure that it appears to be your fault every single time until you get locked away forever, right?
Oh, my God.
So now this kid was my best friend. He was like my guardian angel, you know? So man, I couldn't turn a corner in that school without him being like, Williamson, you cool? I'm like, yeah, I'm good. Thanks, Jose. Like, you know? Like, we became friends. He was my buddy.
It worked out for you at the end.
And I told my mom. My mom's like, don't you feel better? I'm like, I think you signed me up for a gang. Like,
snitches gets friends.
I'm still in that story. Gang to this day, probably.
All right. March 1998, a war breaks out between Albania rebels in Kosovo and the Serb government of Yugoslavia. With Biha's connections, their power and influence grow. In 1996, they conduct their first murders independent of Biha. And in 1997, they conduct their first kidnap and ransom. With their numbers growing, a hardcore group forms around Spasojevic, and they now nickname him the Godfather. By Lukovic and the other fathers, they all start calling them. So the main guy is now a Serbian godfather.
Very cool.
Through many of their followers are only petty criminals like themselves. Their ranks are bolstered by increasing number of Serbian veterans of the Yugoslavian War. This is what we're talking about earlier. They're getting rid of these fucking underlings that are stealing Saturns with butter knives into getting veterans in fucking war criminals. Chief among these was Sretko Kanilic, a veteran of the paramilitary commando unit funded by the Yugoslavian government to fight the Croatians. Units such as this, which adopted the Red Beret of the elite Russian internal security soldiers and were funded by Yugoslavia and Russia, were involved in attempts to drive the Krauts out of Serbian borders regions through mass murder and ethnic cleansing. Kalinic became known as the Beast and as Kalinic the White. He escaped Croatia in 1995 when the new government there attempted to prosecute Serbian militiamen for war crimes. In Belgrade, he rapidly became the most notorious Spasojevic enforcer, killing at least 20 people and allegedly torturing many more with his gray Audi, becoming known citywide as the
Very
Audi
cool.
of Death.
Whoa.
By Belgrade newspapers. And the man still drove that shit.
Dang.
Audi of Death, top five coolest cars ever. Dave, what's the favorite car you ever rode?
I drove an Audi TT for a little while.
Oh, that's a fun one.
When I was coaching water polo right after college, my parents were in the car business, so I would just drive cars off the lot, man.
Oh, wow.
I was very spoiled with cars. I have so many answers to this question. My first car ever was a, it was off the used car lot, but it only had a few thousand miles on it. It was a 96 Ford Explorer.
Eddie Bauer?
Eddie Bauer.
Oh, blue?
It was white teal, gray interior and teal.
The pinstripes?
Pinstripes, yeah, and teal trim and inside the car, too. It was awesome. And I put an aftermarket visor on it. Mm-hmm. I put speakers in the back. Yeah, that car was awesome. I loved it. And then I had a, I had a red convertible Mustang for a little while, nice, which was hilarious. Going to school in Miami, and I always would wear my hat backwards so my hair wouldn't blow. And then I had a sunburn that was a little half circle on my forehead. That's constantly hilarious. From that, man. And dude, I drive a Jeep Wrangler now, and honestly, like, it's not even like a very flashy one. But just driving a Jeep Wrangler makes me so happy, man. It just puts you in a good mood when you got to go somewhere, you know? But I've driven a few Wranglers over the years here. Anytime a Jeep Wrangler came to the used car lot, I'd ask if I could drive it for a month before they sold it. And the coolest car I ever had, probably the most spoiled I've ever been, was when Cadillac Escalades were still, yep, they were still kind of new at the time.
Yep.
Jason Taylor of the Miami Dolphins traded his in, so he had like a first generation Escalade, and then he traded it in, and it was on the used car lot. So I took it up to college with me for a year, and the OnStar was still hooked up, and it still had his name attached to it. Mm-hmm. So every time I'd get drunk, I'd be like, "Hey, check this out!" And we'd call OnStar, and I'd be like, "Where did the?" I'd be like, "This is Jason Taylor. Where did the Dolphins play this week?" And they'd be like, "The Dolphins are away in Charlotte." I'm like, "How far away is that?" And they'd be like, "It's 4 hours from where you are now." I'd be like, "Oh shit, I gotta get there. Could you give me directions?" I thought it was so funny.
Just the world before the internet.
Yeah. So yeah, I love that Escalade, man, because it wasn't a brand new Escalade, so I didn't feel like I was like over the top, mm-hmm, you know. But it was really nice, so it was nice to have a cool car at that point in my life, my junior year of college, you know. But yeah, that's pretty hard to beat.
My favorite cars, I got two. My first car was a 68 Chevy truck.
Hard to beat those classics.
Yeah, man. We worked on that. Me and my dad got that's painted, cool, changed it up. I wish I never sold it. And then my current car right now, I recently bought it during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little old, 05 Lexus LS430, but it's only got 40,000 miles on it. So it was kept in an old man's garage.
Perfect.
And it's in perfect condition. It's just one of my
those favorites. Are the steals to find it.
Yeah.
My grandma had a Cadillac that she put like 2,000 miles on for, mm-hmm, like 8 years.
Yeah.
And so when she got too old to drive, I bought it from her. And now, I mean, I love that car. It was spotless.
Yeah.
And I love that car.
I just love like kind of keeping weird old shit kind of flossy. But let's get back to it. Though the Zoo Man can escalated to murder and kidnapping, Spasohivich and Lukovic were arrested again in 1987 for car theft, with the police encouraging them to become police informants, to which they agree. Rather than have them turn on their criminal colleagues, the police introduced them to the Yugoslavian intelligence officials who utilized their personal and drug connections in Albania and Kosovo to report on the activities of ethnic Albanians opposed to the Serb-dominated government, including Albanian insurgents operating in their new home region of Medvedva. As police informants, their power and influence grew, especially as the Albanian insurgency escalated into the Kosovo War. And what's interesting about this, man, is just like, you know, banks and businesses, if, mm-hmm, you get too big to fail, the government's not going to prosecute you. They're just going to start working with you.
All right, guys, that's the first episode of this two-parter about the Zoo Man Clan, Serbia's most dangerous mafia. That was my guy, Davey Dubs, Dave Williamson, my tour brother. You know, also, he was one of the guys who helped me get on this tour. I did this festival a couple years ago with a couple of buddies of mine named called the Southland Comedy Festival. One of the most badass things I've ever done. Almost 100 comics were in it. 30 shows all sold out. I linked up with Dave and hung out, and then somehow he threw my name to Bert, and now I'm here and changed my life. Other than that, guys, this is part one, so make sure you check out next week, and then after that, we're doing the Hawaiian Gardens. Apparently, we're finally going into the Comedy Store. We're finally doing it with Officer Gannon, LAPD, who specializes in La MA, the Mexican Mafia. This is by far the most dangerous episode of a podcast I have done, or I would argue any comedian has ever done, because this gang is about 6 miles away from my house. Though,
doing that Armenian one wasn't that safe because I live in, guessed it, Little Armenia. So, whatever. It's all fine. This podcast was pretty fun. Hope you guys had a good time. I think it's getting the groove, you know. I think the real podcast, where it needs to go, is almost like the show Hot Ones, you know, where they eat a hot wing, it breaks their down their senses, and you ask them a personal question. I think that's just what we're going to do here. Right now, I am in my robe in the hotel, Hard Rock Hotel in Hollywood, Florida. I got to say, this hotel's pretty nice. But other than that, love you guys. Keep listening. Keep growing it. Share it with your friend if you think this thing's getting good and you're enjoying it. Or keep it to yourself and be our little secret. Peace, guys. You mean the world. Bye.